Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropens den regn off my kopp. En pink viadekt på bussen till kleine farben topp. Geht mir kein Sach mit. Die Tropp.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold, and this week on Kill Me Now we have part two of my conversation with Max Burkholder, who is so interesting and so evolved for someone his age, and I just had the best time talking to him. So I know you're going to enjoy part two. If you didn't enjoy part one, there's something wrong with you, but he was a real treat. This week, by the way, let me give you some dates since it's the beginning of the podcast and maybe it'll, you know, you'll remember. So I have some gigs coming up. Very important. I have a gig in White Plains on March 17th, Comedy for Kobe. That's Comedy for Kobe. And it is a benefit at, you know, if I knew where it was, I would tell you, but it's in White Plains. Just check my JudyGold.com and you'll be able to see where it is. And Kobe was a very big comedy fan. He was a kid, Kobe Mandel, and he was a kid who cut school one day for the first time with a friend of his. And they went hiking in Israel and they were killed by, dare I say, I'll just say Arab kids who threw rocks at them and put their bodies in a cave and where they died. And he was a big comedy fan. So the Mandel family, the Kobe Mandel Foundation, is a camp for kids with PTSD. And it is needed now more than ever in Israel. And they raise a lot of money through comedy because Kobe was such a big comedy fan. So I love this organization, Kobe Mandel Foundation. Check it out. It's amazing. That's March 17th in White Plains, New York. On the 20th of March, I will be in Phoenix at the Phoenix House of Comedy for Stand Up for Israel. I forgot to do this. The 21st, the YIVO in New York. So I'll fly right back in the morning and be at the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research on the 21st. And then, lucky me, I get to fly to Illinois on the 22nd, Zanies Rosemont, which is a little north of, Chicago. Yes, Chicago. That's 22nd and the 23rd. And then on April 5th and 6th, I'm at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana. I love that club. So there's some dates for you. Check it out on my website, judygold.com. And, you know, you can always follow me on Insta and the Twitter. And I usually do Insta. And I know I'm supposed to do all these other things, but I can't deal with it. So, and I just wanted to say, what a week. The sad news first. You know, I mentioned that Cy Cohen, my neighbor, and really a grandfather to Henry and Ben, passed away. And we sat Shiva all week. I got to say, the Jews do the death. We do it really well. Shiva is such an, you know, it's 7 days of visitors, of not having to worry about food, of people coming together and, you know, talking about, you know, and it's funny. I saw, well, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent because I have ADD, but yeah, people coming together and talking about the impact this person had on their life. And I saw friends of mine, because I lived down the hall. I knew all my friends and family that, you know, friends that came, my friends came to sit Shiva, or pay a Shiva call. And it was just so wonderful. It's, you really don't need to, be, related by blood to have a family. And, yeah, it's been quite a week. And then the one and only, the genius, the mensch, the hilarious, the complicated Richard Lewis. I have to say, I don't know if you saw everyone's posts, but pretty much every comic had some interaction with him. And it was always positive and full of love. And he was the nicest guy. Yes, neurotic, but he was so original. And, you know, he didn't have a happy childhood. And he had demons. But he brought so much joy to the world and to those who knew him. His wife, I understand, an amazing human being. He, you know, he had love and he gave love. And he was so fucking funny. So funny. Just the greatest guy. And I he will be missed. And it was way too young. I know he had Parkinson's, but he died of a heart attack and it was way too soon. He was only 76 years old. I can't say enough good things about him. And, you know, the world is definitely a less funny place because of him. He was on the show. What the hell was the name of the show? He was on a show. Oh, God damn it, Judy. Okay. Well, he was on a TV show that I loved. I'm looking it up right now. Richard Lewis TV show. Of course, it all says Curb, but Anything But Love. He was on the show Anything But Love from 89 to 92. And it was a great show. And, you know, he got acting work, but he had to go back to do stand-up, which is how he started. Which is the gift of the stand-up. Like, it's so great being a stand-up when you can't get acting work, you can still perform. It was like even during the pandemic, we could do stand-up sets on Zoom or go out to a park, you know, which we did. We went outside and did shows outside, but just beloved by everyone and so fucking talented and not fair. So I'm sending my love to Joyce Lipinski, his memory will always be for a blessing because he just was pure goodness. So rest in peace. Also, some good news. on the basketball front. I don't know if you've been, so they're in the NCAA Division III NCAA tournament. You know, the Division I, which is March Madness and all that. And they have a tournament, 64 teams. Then it's, so the first weekend on Friday is 64 teams. And then on Saturday, there's 32 teams left. And then the following weekend, there's 16 teams left on Friday. And the Sweet 16 on Friday, then the Elite Eight are the survivors from Friday. And then it is the Final Four and then the championship, which is in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Since they ranked so high, Trinity, they had home games this past weekend, and they beat Utica, and they beat Swarthmore, and they were nail biters. Well, Utica wasn't as much of a nail biter, but Swarthmore was a nail biter, and I was doing these little videos, you know, pregame videos from the stands, and then I did a halftime report, and it was so fun. So look out for those. You can watch all these games at BantamSports.com. And this weekend, Friday at 7:45 p.m., they play Tufts. Tufts for the third time this season. They won both the other two times, so it should be a tough game. Tufts has a great team. I'm going to have a fucking cardiac arrest at these. I can't. First of all, I don't shut up. I'm just screaming because it's like I just have so much energy and I just am like, come on. You know, I just want to fill them up with confidence and remind them of how much they want this. And they're just a fucking great team. Everyone on that team is so locked into one another. They're smart. It's just amazing to watch. I'm so proud of all of them. Yes, I'm proud of Ben, but I'm so proud of that entire team. They're just a great bunch of guys. So that is so exciting. I haven't worked on a weekend, and God knows, I could look it up right now, how many weeks. So I'm going to have to be taking money out of my goddamn savings account because, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's been 5. Let me see. 5, 6. Oh, here we go. 6. So the last time I worked on a weekend was January 1920. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Next week will be 7. And it's worth it. It's worth it. I just am so proud. And I go crazy at these fucking games. And it's mental. But you're just, I don't know, whatever. I'm glad I'm there. And I'm proud of both of my sons. Both of them have turned into amazing people. And Henry and Ben are just the greatest. So I'm the luckiest person in the world. And I have Elisa. And I'm just a lucky person. I'm being really positive. I don't know why. I hope this isn't the last time I record an opening for my podcast because, you know, poo-poo-poo that I'm being all positive. I wanted to say I did a gig at Katz's Deli on Thursday, and it was just these guys are doing these pop-up gigs and they're killing it. They're killing it. Their names are David and Ethan. And these gigs are great. They're bringing comedy to these amazing places and the audiences are fantastic and they're young. And I just feel so like I feel relevant that I'm making these people laugh. And it's these guys are just thinking out of the box and it's so nice to see. So I'm full of positive things, probably because I'm recording this from Provincetown because I have to get my car fixed. So, my car's in the shop in Orleans because it's half the price of New York. So anyway, that's it. I'm talking too much before the show, but Max Burkholder, by the way, fantastic. I hope you enjoyed my interview, my part two interview. So sit back, relax and enjoy Kill Me Now with guest Mac Burkholder. You then end up, I don't know if anyone's heard of this college. You end up, you take a gap year after high school.
Yes.
And do some indie films.
I do some indie films. I have a quick mental breakdown.
Uh-huh.
First of a few depressive episodes that I've had in my life, really discovered mental health as being important for the first time as I suddenly was lacking it. Yeah.
Was it genetic? Do you have depression in your family?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When I remember it was like around the holidays, like Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's, of 2016, when I first started realizing, oh, something's wrong. Something's up. And I think it's honestly because it was the first time in my life that I didn't really have anything to do, you know?
All your feelings were coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Everything that got pushed down emotionally because I was like, gotta go to school, gotta do work, gotta all the classes, gotta do all this stuff. Can't deal with all that. So all of that came bubbling up. I remember I was talking to my grandpa at my grandparents' place in Boca Raton, very Jewish, incredibly Jewish, old Jews who winter in Boca. I was talking to him about it, and I was like, yeah, I'm really, you know, sad all the time, and I'm depressed, and I'm anxious. And he was like, oh, yeah, you got the family disease. Yeah, we were wondering when that was going to happen.
It's unbelievable. You know, I had my first major depressive episode in 2010, and I had just done a show. I do these one-person shows, and I had just done this show. It's Judy's show, My Life is a Sitcom, and it was all about growing up addicted to sitcoms because I hated, I hated going to school, and that I lived, like I wanted to jump in the TV and be, this is what I lived for, and that I thought, when I got older, I was like, I'm definitely going to be on a sitcom. And I was, but I mean, I never have had, you know, I've been a series regular twice and just recurring since, but never had my, like every comic, you know, before you were born, you know, it was every comic, like Roseanne and all these comics started just getting deals for sitcom. And I never had that. And I finished my run of that show and I woke up and I said, exactly like you, okay, something's wrong. I couldn't talk. And I think that doing that show and reliving my life and my career, just once I stopped doing it, it was over, the run was over, I started feeling everything. It's just, you call compartmentalize. So yeah. And it's a fear. I don't know do you have the fear? I'm always afraid, it's going to come back again, but I have so many tools now.
Yeah.
That I definitely like behavioral therapy. Yeah.
Like this is a thing that I deal with in therapy all the time, is like on a day when I'm feeling just tired or low energy, there will be this nagging little anxiety going, oh, here we go again. Better be careful. Watch out.
Right.
And you know, most often it's wrong, but I had a shit year last year. This year so far has been pretty cool, but a shit year last year. Got into like a depressive episode around like April or May that lasted for a few months, and you know, did a lot of work climbing out of that one.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just something that I have accepted that I'm going to have to deal with for, you know, probably
it's
the rest of my life.
Diabetes.
It's something that's gonna come up every so often, and you know, it's happened a couple times since that first one, but you know, they get a little easier to deal with every time. I lose a little less functionality every time.
Do you, there's so many times, and thank you for talking about this.
Yeah.
I wake up and I recognize it now. So, I have diurnal depression, which is I cannot function during the day, but once the sun goes down, I'm like, fine. You know, William Stryon had nocturnal, but it makes sense because once I had this episode and I was like all day, like, and then I could feel a bit of a release at night, I realized that I had that my entire childhood. You know, like I remember feeling it always and then feeling relief when the sun went down, and which is great since, you know, it works for being a comedian, but do you have people like I will text like Gary Goldman or
I love Gary Goldman.
You know, if you ever, I'm giving you my number, and if you're ever having a because now I know, reach out, tell someone you're having a shitty day.
Yeah.
And they'll reassure, I'm giving you my number because just someone who knows what you're fucking feel, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like
and recognizing
it. So it's so important. Like, you know, I saw my mom and my brother struggle with it a little bit growing up before it ever happened to me. And I thought I understood until it happened to me. And then I was like, oh no, it really is debilitating. It's like, it's debilitating, it's truly, and you can't see it from the outside. So it's impossible to really understand unless you've been through it. And, you know, this most recent time, you know, I was talking with some of my closest friends who were just like, so, but what do you mean? Why don't you just like get up and go to the gym? You'll feel better.
Oh my God.
And I had to be like, so I'm out here getting a beer with you right now. And this is taking every ounce of my willpower and I'm enjoying myself. But it's taking every ounce of strength that I have to be here. And I just hit a wall every night at around 8:30 and I start being like a little incomprehensible, like not making much sense. Like my brain is just clouded. And after a couple weeks of me really trying to explain it to them, they seem to get it. But it's tough. It's tough to understand if you haven't been through
it. It's so hard when no one, because you don't. I mean, it changed, like you said, after you had that first episode, you realize, oh my God, you know, this is what, totally changed me as a person. Totally. Yeah. You know, I always say life is a series of befores and afters, you know, and you're a changed person. Like when my parents died, you know, whatever it you change, you're a different person. And I was definitely a different person after that. So thank you for talking about that. Cause it's just, and you know, people don't realize how much work it is. It's like, okay, this is happening and I have to now identify, is this fear? Is this reality?
Yeah. What's real anxiety? Here? Yeah.
Right. Right. And it's yeah. Good for you. I'm sorry you have to deal with that. It sucks. Okay. So you go to, you take a gap year and then you go to this college called Harvard. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. Like, okay, first of all, can you please act out when you saw you were accepted? So were you with your parents?
Yes.
Okay. So you get the, yeah, go ahead.
So what it was, because
this is my fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, everybody knew that it was the day that the Ivies were releasing, you know, were sending out their first round of stuff for
where early else had action. You applied to?
NYU.
Okay.
Yeah, just those two.
So you're early action Harvard. Okay.
Early action Harvard and NYU, which I ended up deferring that choice for a year by taking a gap year.
Right.
Yeah, so the emails we knew were being sent out at 5 p.m. Eastern, and I was in school that day. I wasn't on set or anything. I was in school, and I was
so it was 2 o'clock. Yeah.
I was in AP Psych. I was in my psychology class, and at like 1:45, I said to the teacher, to Mr. Wax, I was like, "Hey, can I just like not sit here for this and just like go out into my car and just like just be on my computer?" So I go out into my car, and one of my best friends, who I'm still friends with, his name's Jackson Ham, also Jewish. He was cutting class as he often did, and so he walked by the car and he saw me. And he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm waiting for the email." And so he just sits in the passenger seat with me. And at like 1:59, he starts playing a song. It's, "It Feels Like We Only Go Backwards" by Tame Impala, which is now one of my favorite songs. Mm-hmm. So he starts playing that song. 2 o'clock rolls around, 2:01 rolls around. I get the email. It says, you know, "Congratulations." We start going crazy in the car. Like a freshman walks by and he's like, what's going on here? And my friend's like, "He just got into Harvard." And the freshman's like, "Oh, cool, man. Nice." Yeah. He just fucks off, walks away.
Right.
And then after like 5 minutes of celebrating, I close the computer. I call my mom. I go, "Hey, you know," she knew what was going on. I was like, "Hey, I just got into Harvard. And she goes, no, you fucking didn't. And I go, yeah, I did. And she's like, holy fucking shit. Congratulations. I walk back into the classroom, into the psych room. And like I'm still like high off the experience. And I don't really,
of course,
it hasn't fully sunk in yet. And so I go in there and everybody goes dead silent and just stares at me, which if I hadn't got in would have been horrible.
Right.
Everybody goes dead silent and stares at me. And I just go, I got in, and everybody fucking jumps up out of their seats and just starts partying around, jumping up and down. So that was a wild, that was a really good day. Top five most like joyful experiences for sure.
Oh my God. You must have been on cloud nine. What happened with NYU?
I got into Gallatin there as well and just took a year of agonizing over the decision because I really wanted to go to NYU, but everybody in my whole life from top to bottom was like, what are you, fucking idiot? How'd you get into Harvard? Right. This is the easiest choice of all time. So I went there.
Hey everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has three times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome. Did you like going to Harvard?
I like bits and pieces of it. I liked, all the friends that I made there. I'm still tight with a lot of them. I liked doing, I liked doing theater. I liked a lot of my teachers. A lot of my classes were really interesting.
Yeah. I wanted obviously to talk about that, you know, so you did your first theater production, which, okay. You know, someone like me who, you know, I've done a lot of theater, but it's, you know, I'm from New York, so It's the path is always theater to TV film. Right. And here you are learning, and it's a different ball game. People
don't
realize.
Completely different medium, completely different style. Yeah. Everything's different.
The rehearsal, the preparation, you know, it's all like segmented, it's segmented, when you're like, doing a TV or...
I remember for the first 2 weeks of rehearsal, the only note the director would give me before we even started working on the performance or the story or the nuance was, you need to be louder. You need to be so... Which is a note I've never gotten in my life from anybody.
Because you were mic'd.
Yeah, I was always mic'd. He was like, you need to be louder. Like, I had a really bad habit of like swallowing the end of my sentences. So did that, completely different ball game. Really, really wild transition.
Two questions. One, the part that you played, it was Columbinus. It was about the Columbine shooting, and you played Dylan Klebold.
Yes.
First of all, I want to know what kind of research you did. Did you ever speak to his mother?
No. The director did Derek Speedy, who's out here as well. He did a tremendous amount of research. It was his senior thesis. So he did a tremendous amount of research on it, and provided us with everything we needed. Like, I saw clips of the basement tapes, which were a part of the play as well. I saw, I got the opportunity to read pages from his diary, which was very enlightening.
Wow.
But the interesting thing that I came away with is that, like, he was obviously very, very mentally unwell. And the other shooter was clearly not just mentally unwell, but a psychopath, like psychotic antisocial personality disorder. And Dylan very much was not. And so it was the two of them coming together, these two obviously tortured but evil people coming together. And from everything that I got out of it, it's tough to say whether either of them would have done it alone.
Wow, that's interesting. So they were also so dependent on one another. Yeah.
They were so dependent on one another and like feeding into each other very much, like spurring each other on.
Did you read a lot of communications between the two of them? Was
there not so much communications between the two of them, more of Dylan's like personal writings and stuff like that.
Wow.
Another interesting thing, you know, I say interesting, but it's horrible. I mean, obviously so many people were killed, but way more were supposed to die. Way more were supposed to die. The pipe bombs that they planted didn't go off. Their original plan was to have the pipe bombs go off, and then the school would evacuate out of the evacuation doors, and they would be posted up there and just shoot everybody who was trying to evacuate the burning building. But the pipe bombs didn't go off, so they resorted to just storming the school.
It's just crazy. And the fact... That was the first. That was the first.
The first big reckoning with it.
Yeah. And it was shocking. It was shocking. And then now it's a fucking everyday fucking occurrence. And it's, I mean, what is it like? I mean, my kids grew up in New York that we don't really have school shootings here. And I think, and I always say it's because, you know, Dylan had a basement, right? They all had garages and basements and stuff they could. I mean, you grow up in New York in an apartment, your parents know exactly what you're fucking doing. There's no place to hide shit. Yeah. Did it give you any insight into these? I mean, you're a school shooting age kid. You grew up with this shit. Did it give you any insight you think that most people don't have about why this happens?
Yeah. I think so. I think the really easy thing to do in the wake of a school shooting, in the wake of any tragedy, is to categorize the perpetrators as monsters, as non-human, inhuman, because that's much easier for us to deal with rather than the truth, which is that they were humans who, through a combination of their own choices and the systems that they were raised in, were driven to believe that this was the only option that they had.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, you know, systems making it easy for children to access firearms. And, you know, we could talk about that for hours and hours, you know.
Yeah.
I have very strong opinions on that. But yeah, it's easy to categorize them as monsters because we don't want to think of them as people. And I think seeing and recognizing them as people who are influenced by the world that they live in is, I don't want to say correct, but I feel like the best way to understand how and why it happens.
Do you think your depression, the fact that you had that episode before you went to college, probably gave you such a deeper understanding?
Very much so. Yeah. Like ever since then, whether it's a role that I'm preparing for myself or it's somebody's performance in something, I'm so much more sensitive to that now.
Yeah.
To the nuance of it and to the how deep it runs, how deep it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. So deep. The other thing I wanted to ask, you're on stage in front of a live, like,
it's different.
The rush, right? It's
so different.
It's so
fun.
Addicting. Yeah.
It's so incredible. What's it called? So I get really bad allergenic asthma sometimes, like when the seasons change, shit like that. And it gives me this horrible, horrible hacking, wheezing cough, dry cough that lasts for weeks at a time. And sometimes it gets so bad that I just completely lose my voice and just no sound comes out when I try and talk. And that was the case the night before the opening of the first play that I was in. And you know, it's a college production, so there was no understudy.
Right.
It also almost didn't go up anyway because of the material. Like the school really was
the subject,
like, we want to be careful about this because someone might come and try to shoot up this performance.
Oh my God.
But it was the night before opening. I truly, words were not coming out of my mouth. I was texting instead of talking with the director who, you know, to my mind stayed so calm and cool and collected. But after the fact, he let me know that he was shitting himself.
Right, right.
And he was like, you're going to be fine. Just keep drinking tea with honey. You're going to get out on stage and the adrenaline's going to kick in and you're going to be able to talk. And, you know, right up until curtain, no sound was coming out and I didn't know what would happen. Like I had the opening monologue. I had the first line. It was
that
me sitting alone in a chair under a spotlight. And I went and I took my position and the spotlight came up and words came out. I could speak. I could speak. I could project everything like that. The second the lights went out, final curtain, nothing.
Couldn't talk again. Is that not the craziest thing? I mean, when I'm sick, I could have 103 fever.
Yeah.
The minute I get on stage, I am fine. I get off stage, I collapse.
Yeah.
And you don't know that unless you're in. So does it make you want to do more theater? I mean, you're in New York.
I would love, I mean, that's half the reason I moved out here in 2021 is that I really wanted to do theater professionally. And, you know, it's been slow going on that front. I've gotten close to a few things out here. I've gotten close to a few things out in LA, you know, final rounds of stuff. And then it's just like, you know, they went with the other guy, which is, you know, part and parcel of our line of work. Would love to do that. There is, like, you know, I've built my circle of theater friends up a little bit more and like I'm in stuff that they're producing and in like workshops and readings that they're doing.
The way to get in, yeah.
Which is a great foothold, I think.
And readings. Readings are great.
Readings, yeah. I did a reading a month ago for a play called Tea or A Perfectly Normal, Not Gay Italian Family Christmas.
Oh, that's funny.
It's a really, really, really good play. But another thing that I do every so often is, do you know Naked Angels?
Yeah, of course.
You know, they're like Tuesday night readings that they do.
Yeah, yeah.
At William Bartlecle Tavern. Yeah, so I'll do that sometimes. I'll go in and, you know, like be there with other, you know, few dozen actors for the cattle call for, you know, the play readings there. And that's super fun. It's really good for like, just sort of keeping your fangs sharp in terms of just like performing in front of a live
audience.
People
don't realize it's like going to the gym. You have to continue doing it.
You have to do that. You have to go to class. You have to do all of it.
Always. Yeah. Did you feel like there was any prejudice towards you because you were a TV felt like that they were like
any real prejudice nothing right. like who's this guy coming in but right. Everybody in the production did call me film boy for the entirety of it.
That's nice
yeah, hey film boy, come
did
over
you,
here
you oh god jealous do you find theater actors differently skilled, and in what way than the actors you worked with, you know, growing up?
Definitely differently skilled, you know, obviously not in any better or worse way. They're just, they really are two different art forms. A friend of mine who grew up doing theater and is the director of Columbinus, actually, he's an actor as well. Very talented. He grew up doing a lot of theater, and, you know, a big thing of his transition into like self-taping for film and TV stuff is you have to be, here's the way I put it. In film, you have the license to be as small as you want. The camera's right here. We can see everything. We can hear everything.
Right.
In theater, you have the license to be as big as you want. People are willingly suspending their disbelief because they're in this big building and it's this setting and there's right. a stage and there's lights. So you can be very, very big on stage in a way that is very difficult to pull off, I would say, in film.
Right.
And you so can you be think, very small it, in film in a way that's very difficult to pull off on stage.
Yeah. It's the nuance that you can't, I mean, you have to really communicate it on a stage in front of hundreds of people and without going over the top, you know. I want you to get more theater because I love theater and I love live audiences so for you.
My favorite production that I did in college was of a Polish play called Absinthe. And we did the first English language production of it. And, you know, mm-hmm. I talk about this license to be big and I talk about this license to be small. This was like the perfect union between it because we did it kind of like Sleep No More, where we did it sort of disjointed in timeline and like in a house where we would just like drag audience members into rooms to like do scenes for them and shit. And like my opening monologue every night was in a car and there would be four audience members in the car with me. So that was super fun because it was this union of like, I could be as small as I wanted or as big as I wanted based on the moment. It was so dope.
And also like, you know, you do a scene in a movie, you do it you know, 100 times, 50 times, whatever, because they have to change the lighting and blah, 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 and they want this. Mm-hmm. And then you're done. You're done. Yeah. And live performance, you have to be like, I'm telling this story for the first time.
Because,
you know, the audience has never seen it. It's a different audience. It's a whole other, Hey, everyone, I have a new sponsor, and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome. You are now in Ted on yes. Peacock. Cock, 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 cock.
Kiss cock.
Hey. And you're working with, it's so funny because everyone in every interview you do is like, is the bear there? Is the bear? Yeah. And so it's not. It's not there. You're speaking to an empty space, but Seth is off stage doing the line. So you're actually acting with him. Are you enjoying? Do you love this? I mean, Seth MacFarlane is so fucking funny. I can't even.
He's so fucking funny. Yeah. The whole goddamn experience was such a blast. Like from start to finish, from the first table reads through, even the press stuff and the premiere that we just did.
Right.
So fun. Really, I'm not like people, butter people up or they try and, hyperbolize, but Seth MacFarlane is a comedic genius. It's crazy. It's right. actually nuts.
Yeah.
Like being there on set with him every day. Like, yeah, it was so
And the
sick.
Fact that he's so edgy and subversive, and it's so fun. Like, I believe you can joke about anything as long as the joke is funny. And he is the perfect example of that.
He's always funny. It always works. An Anthony Jeselnik interview that I saw a while back where he quotes someone else saying art is getting away with it. And I feel like with comedy, that's especially true.
Same thing.
Like if someone gets offended by your joke, it wasn't funny enough. It wasn't funny enough, or you weren't coming at it of a place of letting everybody know where you actually stand. Like, I feel like that's so important in comedy, is that the audience and you agree.
Or you I agree with that to an extent, because sometimes the person who's getting offended, it's on them, because of their experience and the fact that they have no fucking sense of humor. And also, if you're getting offended by a joke, take a look at yourself. Like, it's not about you. That's not what the comic intended. Like, it's like you're taking it in a certain way and not the way that the comic
sometimes is what the comic intended. Sometimes it's what the comic intended.
Oh,
they're just bad comics.
They suck. Yeah. But I'm not, with Seth, forget it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You are, Max, a delight. And I know you live in the city, and I want you to come see one of my sets because I think you'd fucking think I was hilarious. But
I would love that. Well, I mean, I've seen your stuff on Instagram.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I would love that. I'd love to come see you.
Oh my God, Max! And I want to be on your list of people you call when you're not feeling great. I always ask my guests two questions before I go, and thank you for doing this. You're a delight. And you're so fucking talented. And you have a new puppy.
I have a new puppy. Here, wait, let me show him off for the camera just before we go.
Hey, buddy.
Billy. Hi, Billy.
Hey, buddy. This is Billy.
Hi, Billy.
/ William the Conqueror.
Oh, you're the baby. How big is he going to get?
He's going to be about 40 pounds maximum.
Wow. Nice. He's so cute.
I just flew into Houston to pick him up like 11 days ago. I just got back to the city yesterday because my plan was to put him under the seat on the airplane. And he's too big.
Yeah.
He's 20 pounds.
Already? Wow.
Yeah, he's too big. So we had an impromptu cross-country drive. We went to Texarkana, Memphis,
nice.
Knoxville, Raleigh, Potomac, and then here yesterday.
And did you bond? That's such a good bonding thing.
I know. It and really ended up being a blessing in disguise. Like he,
yeah,
he knows that
and
I'm
he knows
looking
you're
out
his
for
dad.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but. Oh, hi, Billy. Okay, here's my two questions. One, we discussed a lot of this, but what do you do for your everyday mental health? Do you, I'm on meds, I work out, I meditate.
Yeah. I had a meditation practice going for a while that I would love to get back into, but it just fell out. I take Lexapro.
Yeah. Oh, I did the Lexapro. Yeah, I'm on Paxil.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I was on Lexapro. I started it on my gap year when I first got depressed, and I unintentionally just accidentally stopped it right when I moved out here, and nothing bad happened.
Oh,
so I was just like, all right, I'll just keep it off. And then this most recent episode, I was like, I would love a boost, a little boost to help like muscle my way out of this would be great. So take that. You know, some people might be like, well, of course you do this. But for me, historically, it's not always been the easiest thing in the world. I make sure to get outside every day.
Yes, make sure to very important.
Very important. You know, I'm very much a homebody. I can like be in my house alone or with my dog for 3 days straight and just eat and read and play video games. I can totally do that. But if I do that for too long, I will get depressed. So I have to get outside. I have to get some sunlight.
I do the same thing. There's days I don't go outside at all. Yeah.
I make sure to talk to a friend. I really try hard to make sure to talk to a friend in person every day.
Wow.
Which is so
good.
So helpful. I don't always manage that. You know, my friends have their own schedules and stuff. But I try really hard to do that. Animal time is huge. If I can get some, which is like, this guy has no idea the load that he's about to be carrying, in terms of supporting my mental health. Yeah. That's really important. And,
Good.
Yeah. And if I can,
I had to
get a little exercise, but that's the toughest
my
one.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the easiest one for me. The going outside. I could stay in here for two. Same with you.
Yeah.
And not go outside. And it's really bad. And I need sun, but I'm just like you, like with the, I just want to stay home. And yeah, it's so hard. Okay. Second thing, I call the podcast Kill Me Now because I get annoyed at every fucking thing. So what pisses you off more than anything like that makes you fucking crazy mad? It could be anything.
The first thing that comes to mind right now, which I genuinely have really strong feelings about, is when you're at the airport and they start the boarding call and fucking everybody gets up.
Oh my God. I fucking, and
why do you
want to
be on? Why do you want to be on the plane longer is my question.
Right.
It's already like when I go to the airport, I'll like, you know, go to a restaurant or the airport bar and I'll just sit there until like 5-10 minutes before boarding ends and then just go right on. Like, if
well,
I have
they
to,
want their carry-on. That's why.
Yeah,
but
they want the carry-on. Who gives a shit about the carry-on?
When they get up and they're calling the, you know, group one, group that, you know, and they're like, they give the thing like, I didn't realize I was in group four. Yes,
yeah,
you fucking
fuck
did.
You.
Shut the
you
fuck
knew.
Up,
you knew, you
asshole.
Piece of shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
I
no, it's just like,
you.
It's
yeah,
like they started calling for military people and it's like, I don't see any of you in fucking uniform. Why are you standing?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
They just wait there. They hover. It's so annoying. And then it's like, boom. I hate that too. Oh,
and they
God,
crowd
so
it.
You, did
an you know, you can't get
thing.
In when it's your actual
it's like,
fucking group.
Right. And it's like, move, bitch. I hate. Yeah. I love that. We have a lot in common, Max, even though you're, you know. 40 years young. No, not 40, 30 something. Max, I can't thank you enough. You are a delight. I wish you
it has been a pleasure.
Only good things. Good success. You got a huge, wonderful future ahead of you, and Billy's a lucky dog.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of my interview with Max Burkholder. What a fucking great guy. And I'm going to make a date with him to come see me do stand-up. He already texted me. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, marketed, scheduled, everything by Brittany Jo Sowards Richmond. Also, as I mentioned, I have lots of gigs coming up in between basketball games because I'm a basketball mom. But let's see. I have March 17th, Comedy for Kobe in White Plains, New York. Phoenix on the 20th, Stand Up for Israel at the House of Comedy. YIVO Institute for Jewish Research on the 21st in New York City. Zany's Rosemont, March 22nd and 23rd in Rosemont, Illinois. Then I'll be passing out. And I'm at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana on April 5th and 6th, which is a great club. So check all that out. Yeah, that's all I have to say to you. I thank you so much for listening. Also, if you want to watch Ben's game Friday night, 7:45, bantamsports.com, and follow me on Instagram at Judy Gold, JWDYDGOLD, because I do the live Instagram live from the game with Elisa, and we are having so much fun, and I act like I'm a newscaster or a whatchamacallit, a sports commentator, even though when the guys are back in the locker room, and someone is like, oh, where are the boys? I say, oh, they're backstage. That's how I talk. I'm like such an idiot. Everything is in theater speak with him. You know, like if some recruit comes and plays with, I'm like, oh, how did his audition go? And it's like, mommy, he's not auditioning. He's, you know, working out with the team. He's trying out for the team. He's not, whatever. So I'm a theater nerd. Anyway, that's it. I hope they release the hostages soon or get some information, but that whole situation, as you know, I'm quite disturbed by it and the misinformation. And I pray and do whatever I hope. I don't know what else to do. And I think about those hostages every single day. And I also think about the fact that no one wants innocent people dying anywhere. And the misinformation, when Israel is providing aid, bringing aid into Gaza, and Hamas is stealing it from these people, and they're blaming Israel. You know, when you get all of your information from these news sources that are anti-Semitic, don't believe Israel has a right to exist, and are made up of terrorist sympathizers, that's the information you're going to get. You have to search for the right information. And it's a fucking horrible situation. And I really hope it ends soon. But you know what? Israel has a right to exist and defend itself. And apparently, you know, the anti-Semitism that was always there, now people have an excuse to be vocal about it. But you know what? Do your due diligence. Stop posting bullshit that you know nothing about, because it's really dangerous for us. So rest in peace to that dentist who was shot, the Jewish dentist. There was a man attacked in Paris wearing a yarmulke. This is happening all over, and it's not okay. Stand up for us. Don't be silent. Anti-Semitism is not okay under any circumstances, period. End of conversation. Okay, so that was my public service announcement. I will I'll be ranting next week. I can't wait. And I thank you all for listening. I love you all. And as we always say, oh, I do want to say one more thing. One more thing. And I wish I said it in the beginning, but I didn't. This podcast is coming out on March 5th, which is my father's birthday. And my father would be 108 today, and he was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man. A fantastic father. He was born in 1916. He was an older father, but his values, he served in World War II, and it's a good thing he's not around to see these fucking idiots. These fucking idiots like Trump and these disgusting people and the way they behave, and also doesn't have to experience this onslaught of anti-Semitism, because I don't know what he saw in World War II because he wouldn't talk about it. But he was there during Blitzkrieg, and that's all I know, and he's gone. But when I look at that flag and I they play the Star Spangled Banner before Ben's games, I think of him, and I think of what this country meant to him, and my mother, who was also very patriotic. And I wish that we could go back to a time. Well, no, I don't wish we could go back to a time. I just wish people would fucking read a goddamn book or the newspaper and stop the hate. That's it. That's all I have to say. I said it all. I love you all. And as we always say, so long.